our daf for today is Chav Dalet, but we have to finish up a little bit here on Chav Gimel Mid Beis. So we're going to begin on daf Chav Gimel Mid Beis. Ki Osa Ravin. So it's basically at the end of the daf. Only a few words on the daf left. Now, we spoke in the Mishnah about the sheet of Rabbi Meir that the Baal Din has the authority and the power to disqualify the witnesses that are brought by the other Baal Din. And we went through a long, complex presentation as to how to make sense out of that, because ostensibly it's impossible for the Baal Din to disqualify Aden. And the Gemara says that he testified together with another aid. He was not considered an Ogeh Be'edus because his Baal Din, Shekinegdo, had brought two pairs of Edim, and therefore, even if he would disqualify one pair of Edim, it wouldn't have any impact on the case itself, and if he's not an Ogeh Be'edus. But we really never discussed the other sheet of Rabbi Meir, also in our Mishnah, that the litigant, the Baal Din, has rights to passel the judge that's brought by the other Baal Din. We'll call him Reuven. Reuven is the second Baal Din. He's the one who wants to disqualify the Dayan of Shimon, the first Baal Din. And the Mishnah says in the name of Rabbi Meir, Zeh posel Dayano shel Zeh, that he could passel the Dayan. So that's what the Gemara is going to analyze now. Ki asa Ravin om Rav Yochanan, and when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, where Rav Yochanan was, his Rebbe, and he came to Bavel, he brought a statement in the name of his Rebbe, Rav Yochanan, to explain our Mishnah, how it is that the Baal Din, according to Rabbi Meir, could disqualify not only the witnesses of the other Baal Din. Reuven could not only disqualify the witnesses of Shimon, but he could also disqualify the judges of Shimon. Reisha, now we're talking about the Reisha of our Mishnah, meaning Rabbi Meir Shita, that the Baal Din has the power to disqualify the Dayanim of the other Baal Din of Shimon. So we're on the top of Daf Chav Dalet Amud Aleph. The Edim Psuim V'Dayanim Kshirim. So we're talking about a case where the witnesses were found to be posel, meaning the testimony, the evidence was brought by one Baal Din against the witnesses, and after Beis Din investigated that evidence, they came to the conclusion that the evidence is soundproof, it's reliable. And Dayanim Ksherim, then we would assume, Lechora, that if he doesn't have evidence to confirm, if the Baal Din doesn't have evidence to confirm the illegitimate status, the ineligible or disqualified status of the Dayanim, then the Dayanim that are brought and appointed by the other Baal Din should remain valid and sit on the court to judge the case. And now, Ravin, in order to interpret Rabbi Meir, introduces a new concept called Migu. What is this Migu? Migu usually means Mitoch, but there always has to be some logic behind the Migu. Mitoch the Pasli Edim, Pasli Nami Dayanim. In other words, once the Baal Din has proven with evidence that was accepted by Beis Din after investigation that the Edim of his other Baal Din of Shimon are indeed disqualified, then he's also believed to disqualify the Dayanim. There's some sort of a migu that we extend his credibility from A to B, from his disqualification of the Edim to his disqualification of the Dayanim. What kind of extension is this? And what's the logic to say that since he's believed here, he's believed there? Maybe you could suggest that when a person comes to disqualify, we don't trust him, And if he can prove that at least partially he's reliable, he was not in any way perjuring himself, lying in front of the court, that gives him a certain emunus, a certain quality of reliability that we could rely on him, a certain credibility to extend even to the case of Dayanim. And the impression you get here is that even if the Baal Din has no objective evidence to disqualify the Dayanim, nevertheless, since he brought evidence and proved his claim against the witnesses, against the Edim, we extend his credibility. In a few moments, I'm going to substitute this explanation with a second explanation based on the Yad Ramah. But so far, I'm giving a more superficial explanation. Sefer, in the Sefer, the reverse took place. The Dayanim Psulim, meaning the Baal Din was able to adduce evidence that these Dayanim are either related to him or the other Baal Din, or they are avaryanim, in other words, they are psulim because they were guilty of theft or something. And he was able to establish that with objective evidence. And you would think, Edim Ksherim, but since he doesn't have evidence against the witnesses, therefore the witnesses remain qualified. No. Comes on Reb Meir and he rules that Migu de Pasli Dayanim, Pasli Nami Edim. Then once again, the same principle of Migu applies, that we can extend the credibility of the Baal Din from, in this case, Dayanim to Edim. Just the reverse of what we said before. In other words, somehow, once the Baal Din has a certain credibility, his testimony was accepted. If we can accept his testimony to invalidate the Dayanim, then even though he shouldn't be believed against the Edim, we apply this principle of Migu. And since he had a double claim here against both the Dayanim and the Edim, we take his credibility, extend it one way or the other. If he proved his case against the Dayanim, then we'll accept his testimony against the Edim, and the other way is true as well. Now the Gemara is going to analyze the mechanism of this migu, and believe it or not, the Gemara is going to accept this migu at least in one case, and that's the case where we go from Edim to Dayanim. Why is that so? Maskifle, Rava objects in the following. Bishleim, I can accept the first of the two migus. Migu de pasli edim, pasli nami dayanim. Once he's proved that the edim are disqualified, then we can extend his credibility to the dayanim. Why? Normally, we wouldn't believe him because he's no ger b'dover. After all, he's the baldover. He's the one that these judges are going to issue a judgment against him, a verdict against him. Possibly against him. But the answer is, he's not such a nogeh v'edus. Why? De'ika be'din achrina. You know what? Let Shimon find a different judge or a different court. Meaning, it's not as if Reuven, by implicating the Dayanim of Shimon, has now undermined Shimon's case or ability to sue Reuven. If he doesn't sue him in one court, he could sue him in another court. So in that sense, Reuven's claim against the Dayanim is, as we'd say in Yiddish, nishkeferlach. It's not so powerful. It doesn't have such absolute repercussions that we would say, wait a minute, he doesn't want to be judged. He's trying to sneak away here and get away with murder and not have to pay for the lawsuit against him, the claim against him. No, he'll stand to judge in judgment, and albeit not in this bezdin, but in a different bezdin. So you want to extend his credibility. He's already proven himself in terms of disqualifying the Edim. Let's accept him as far as his claim, as far as disqualifying the Dayanim. Here I can accept Migu. He's not such an Ogeya Vidover, because there's always another court to be judged. But the other way around, says Rava, here the Migu doesn't make any sense. Migu de Pasli Dayanim, Pasli Nami Edim. How can you tell me that just because his claim, Reuven's claim against the judges, was established and verified, therefore we should believe him now against the witnesses, he's certainly an agave davar to disqualify the witnesses. Va'edim suleka. You know, there are no other witnesses to replace these witnesses. Meaning that now Reuven's going to win the case. And why he's going to win the case? Because Shimon has no objective testimony, objective evidence against him. So even though you've accepted and proven the Baldin's claim against the Dayanim to undermine their kashrus, their qualification here in this case, but nevertheless, on that basis, we're going to accept his testimony against witnesses. Clearly here, he has a status of nogeya bedavar, because if he can disqualify the witnesses, he'll win the case, because the Baldin Shekinegdo has no other basis, no other evidence to force Reuven to pay up. And the whole Migu goes down the tubes. But now, Rabosai, we have to remember what we learned on Daf Chaf Gimel. And on Daf Chaf Gimel, we had a scenario in which the Baldin, let's say Shimon was suing Reuven for a halva, Shimon claimed he had two pairs of Eidim. Do you remember that discussion? And in that context, we wanted to suggest that maybe Reuven is not called a Nogeya B'Davar if he testifies against one of the pair of the Eidim to implicate them, because there's another pair of Eidim in any event. Shimon is in the driver's seat. He has the security, the guarantee of another pair of Eidim. So the Gemara now is going to use that Ukimta, that interpretation of this of the scenario, to apply here as well. Lotzricha de'ika kas acheres, that Shimon has another pair of witnesses. A kat, of course, is a set or a pair of witnesses. It could be two minimum, it could be three, four, five, etc. So now what happens is that we want to believe the Baldin, meaning Reuven, to disqualify the Edim, and that's based on the Migu. But if you'll counter, but what about the fact that he's no Gerbeidus, that the Migu shouldn't give him that credibility because that's how he's going to win the case? The answer is he's not going to win the case. Why? Because Shimon has another pair of Edim, so to speak, in his back pocket. And therefore, basically, Rav Meir's logic is that we can extend the credibility from Dayanim to Edim. And why is that? Because there's another pair of Edim, and he's not called a Nogea the Edus. So the Gemara is still a little bit confused about this Migu concept and the mechanism that underlies Migu. So at this point, I wanted to share with you an insight of the Yad Ramah. The Yad Ramah says the following. I don't get the whole point here. What are you telling me? That Reuven, when he disqualifies the witnesses, he's not a Nogeya B'Davar because there's another set of witnesses, and you say, well, he's already proven his credibility with regard to the judges, and therefore we apply the principle of Migu. He says, it doesn't make any sense. How can you disqualify Edim, who have what we call a cheskas kashrus, they have a status in Beis Din, they're believed, they have credibility, how can you do so just because he's not an Ogea Beis? Okay, he's not an Ogea Beis. So what? And this question is, you know, this objection that he raises is especially powerful before the Gemara has two pairs of Edim. Maybe if Shimon has two pairs of Edim, you could always say that we believe him because in any event, Shimon has another pair of Eidim. But in the Hava meeting, the Gemara understood that there was only one pair of Eidim. So the Yad Ramah introduces a whole new svara over here. And he says that the Migu is concealing another point here that we may have missed in the sugya. And what is that? Who is bringing these witnesses? It was Shimon. Now, witnesses don't stand on their own. I mean, it could be in secular law, there is such a thing as an expert witness. But in halacha, witnesses have to be brought by a baldin. And the status and the credibility, the qualifications for that pair of witnesses, to some extent, is dependent upon the Baal Din who subpoenas them, who brings them into Beis Din to support his claim. This is a sugya in Masechet Makis. I don't know, Rav Osei, have you learned Masechet Makis? In Masechet Makis, the Gemara talks about a case where a Baal Din brings Edim, and then the Baal Din Shekinegdo brings Edim Hamazimim, which means they disqualify that Edim. And then the Baal Din turns around and he says, well, I have another pair of Edim. He brings in a second pair of Edim, and the Baal Din is Amazim them, Imanu Ayisan, you couldn't have been there. And this goes on and on and on. Every single pair of Edim that he brings in, they're Mazimim. And the Torah says that we believe the Mazimim against the Zom, Vasisim lo kashu Zomam, the law of Edim Zom. So the Gemara says at some point, again, you have to know whether it's twice, thrice, whatever it is, we don't believe the Edim at all. Why don't we believe the Edim? The Edim have their independent Cheskes Kashus, but the answer is their Nemonis, to some extent, is dependent upon the Baal Din who brings them into Beis Din. Maybe he paid them, maybe they owe him a debt of gratitude for something. And after a while, when we see that consistently the same Baal Din brings in Edim that are disqualified, that are Edim Zoamim, that perjure themselves, after a certain period of time, we no longer rely on him to bring Edim into Beis Din. And even though the Edom per se are not, you know, they don't have any reputation problem, nevertheless, they cannot testify on behalf of the Baal Din, because this Baal Din is a fishy Baal Din. Says the Yad Ramah, that's where Migu comes to play, perhaps in Rav Meir's frame of reference. That if the Baal Din has already proven that he brings in judges that are disqualified in order to judge the case, we question his reliability and his honesty to bring in witnesses to testify in his behalf. The basic lumdus, I think, of the Yad Ramah is to say that let's integrate judges and witnesses into one whole. This is a unit which is coming from the Baal Din's perspective to support his claim. He's bringing this judge. He's saying, well, this judge is going to judge favorably. Why? Because he's going to see that my claims, you know, we discussed this yesterday, if you remember, are eisgehalten, you know, they're reliable and so forth and so on. Okay, I don't want to spend too much time on this because, as you know, we want to learn an entire blot here on Daf Chav Dalet. So let's let it ride for the meantime. So the Gemara now raises the following kasha. Holeka kas acheres mai, if there's only one set of witnesses which was brought in by Shimon, and Reuven is trying to disqualify them, then Rabbi Meir would agree that Hachinami Delo Matzi Pasli, in such a case, as the Gemara just interpreted the name of Rava, the Baal Din doesn't have the ability to disqualify the Edim. Says the Gemara, Hainu Deravdimi. We're now studying Ravin. Now keep in mind that Ravin and Ravdimi both traveled from Eretz Yisrael, where they learned under the tutelage of Rabbi Yochanan, and they brought back Rabbi Yochanan Shmuel's his statements to Bavel. We already have in the previous Gemara that we learned yesterday the statement of Rav Dimi in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that only if there are two pairs of Edim, then the Baal Din is considered trustworthy and he's not an Ogea B'Dovar, because if he disqualifies one pair of Edim, his other Baal Din has another pair of Edim. And now you're quoting Ravin in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Ravin is just repeating what we already know from Rav Dimi in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Hainu Ravin, Hainu Rav Dimi. They're both telling me that the litigant, meaning Shimon, had two pairs of Edim. And that's why we can trust the claim of Reuven. You know, in the Habamina, we thought that there was only one pair of Edim. And then we're standing on the shoulders of this Migu, and we believe the Baal Din Shekinegdo to passel the Edim and so forth. Now you tell me there are two pairs of Edim, so we're back to square one. This we've already learned in Rav Dimi. So Ravin is not repeating anything that we didn't know for Rav Dimi. Ikabeinayu, the Gemara says, Migu. Oh. The question is whether or not we rely on this principle of Migu. Meaning, although we're applying Migu here specifically in this case, there are implications for Migu elsewhere in other cases throughout throughout Choshen Mishpat, throughout the laws of Dini Mominus. And Dimar Savam Rinan Migu, Ravin, who just came now, and we studied him today here on Daf Chav Dalet, he introduces the concept of Migu, Umar Savalo Amrina Migu, but Rav Dini never accepted the principle of Migu. In other words, here in this case, everybody agrees that the Migu is going to operate to remove the status of an Ogeva Eidus, because there's another pair of Eidim. But elsewhere, in other cases, there may be a Migu without that power of two pairs of Eidim. Do we accept the principle of Migu, which allows me to extend the credibility of someone from one statement to another statement? Okay. Now we have a little bit of an agadita, which is always, you know, is always a little bit of a breath of fresh air. Gufa Amrei Shlokish. Initially, we thought that according to Rav Meir, a Baldin could disqualify the Eidim of the other Baldin. And Reish Lakish said that's impossible. How could it be that a litigant without adducing evidence could undermine the qualifications of a pair of Eidim? Amrei Reish Lakish, Peh Kadosh, Yomar Dover Zeh. This is a rhetorical question. Could it be that Rav Meir could have said such a thing? Tni Eidim. And in order to justify the statement of Rabbi Meir, who's a peh kadosh, he's a holy mouth, Reish Lakish was compelled to introduce Edo, which means that the original Eidus was not the Eidus of two witnesses, but rather of one witness, as we discussed yesterday, meaning that Shimon brought the testimony of one witness, and that's exactly where Rabbi Meir says that Reuven has the ability to undermine the qualifications of that witness. So the Gemara now, strangely enough, doesn't understand this lavish praise which Reish Lakish heaps upon Rabbi Meir. Now keep in mind, Rabbi Meir was a Tana, Reish Lakish was a first generation Amora. There's not all that much time between them. But the Gemara thinks that Reish Lakish was at least as capable in learning as Rabbi Meir. As we say in Yiddish, et fashteit guten lernen. He understood learning very well. Why is he lavishing such praise in Rabbi Meir, peh kadosh, to the extent to which Reish Lakish is working overtime, sweating it out to try to understand what Rabbi Meir said? What does he care? Now, this is a very Lithuanian approach. What do I mean by a Lithuanian approach? In Litha, the way it worked was that if you were a scholar, you were a Rosh Hashiva, you couldn't care less what anybody else said. Like I remember somebody in Rav Soloveitchik's class once said, but Rav Aaron said, meaning Rav Aaron Kotler, so Rav Soloveitchik says, don't bother me. You listen to what I have to say. That's how it worked in Litha. Reish Lakish was an outstanding Talmud Chacham of the Lithuanian style. Again, he didn't live in Litha. But what does he care about Rabbi Meir? He has to rack his brains to figure out what Rabbi Meir said. Just give me one more second. Aini, is that so? Va'amar Ula. Ula says, are you aware of the greatness and the sharpness of Reish Lakish, his profound understanding of learning? Haroes Reish Lakish based on Medrash. If someone had any sort of interaction with Rabbi Meir, with Rabbi Reish Lakish in the base Medrash, is Ki'ilu, what did he see in front of him? Oker Harim V'tochanam Zebazeh. He can literally remove a mountain from its base in the ground and take two mountains and just smash them together. That's how profound his understanding was. So Reish Lakish has to explain Rabbi Meir.
If it's one witness, you're not disqualifying the witness because there's something wrong with the witness. You're disqualifying the principle because you can't judge with one witness.
Correct. Not only that, but what the Beis Din could do is they could judge for a shmua with one witness, and if he, the litigant, says, you know what, I don't want to take the shvu and so forth and so on, then he has a certain power against the Neid Echad. But again, that's the sugi that we learned yesterday. What I'm trying to suggest is, why did Reish Lakish work so hard to explain Rabbi Meir? Normally, a person of that stature would say, don't bother me. I don't have to explain Rabbi Meir. Yeah.
I'm thinking that weren't they aware that the students of Rabbi Akiva had all perished from a lack of respect for one another? Maybe he's doing his best to be respectful.
Excellent.
To be.
So David, you could have written the script here.
Well,
I'll have to get your autograph after Shia. Omar Ravina. Ravina said, wait a minute. You're telling me that Reish Lakish was such a top-notch scholar and he was so brilliant and profound in his analyzing insights, penetrating insights, that Rabbi Meir doesn't rate, so to speak, on his radar screen. That's not true. Halo kol haroa, Ravina made a statement, Rabbi Meir b'beis ha-medrash ki'ut oker harei harim v'tochanam zepezeh. Harei harim means the greatest of mountains. You know, this is Mount Everest, or what's it called in Switzerland?
The Matterhorn?
What?
The Matterhorn in Switzerland?
No. Jungfrau! Yeah. Jungfrau! Right? That's what it's called. It's amazing that I remember this. I was in Switzerland once in my life, you know, 20 years ago. Jungfrau! I remember we got up to the top of Jungfrau, we got to take a cable car, and at some point you can go out on a porch and you look below you because you're on a graded, what do you call it, extension, and you see below you like a couple 100,000 miles, you know. My feet still hurt from it. In any event, he was Oker Hari Harim Zebazeh. So the Gemara says Hachi Kama. This is what David was saying before. Bo Ure'e Kama Mechavin Zezeh. The Gemara never had a question about the fact that Reish Lakish tried hard to understand Reish Lakish, to understand Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir was even a more profound thinker than Reish Lakish. But rather, the Gemara was saying, in amazement, you know, in espilus, the Gemara was saying, look at the chibuv, look at the respect of one Talmud Chacham for another. In other words, Reish Lakish deferred to Rabbi Meir to such an extent that he would work very hard to understand and explain Rabbi Meir because of the respect that he had for Rabbi Meir. And this, the Gemara is going to say, is indicative of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the land of a beloved relationship where one Talmud Chacham cherishes another. It's not such a heavy competition. They're not trying to undermine one another. On the contrary, they're trying to explain each and every one out of an emotional feeling of deference. And the Gemara wants to illustrate this. Where do we see the deference and the respect of one Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael for another? Ki hadi Yosef Rebbe. Okay, now we have to know a little background over here. There was a Tana by the name of Rabbi Yossi. Keep in mind that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, was the last of the Tanaim. Rabbi Yossi was of the previous generation. But on the one hand, you have to have respect for an elder statesman, you know, from a previous generation. But you have to know one thing here, and it took me a while to figure this out. Rebbe was much greater than Rabbi Yossi. In fact, Rabbi Yossi used to attend the shiurim of Rebbe as long as he was alive. Could you imagine? It's like they say about the Vilna Gaon, that he was so nispal with the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Litzhak, and the Mesillas Yesharim. He said, I would walk across Europe by foot to come to Italy to hear the shiurim of the Ramchal. And Rabbi Yossi was so nispal from Rebbe, even though he was much younger than him, meaning Rebbe was much younger than him, that he would sit in the class together with the young scholars because of his deference, of his feeling that Rebbe was so much greater than him. And here's the story the Gemara tells us, that even though Rebbe was so much greater than Rabbi Yossi, ki hadi Yosef Rebbe, Rebbe was sitting and teaching his students, v'ka'amar, he declared, also lahatman es hatzonen. We have an Isra Hatmana. Hatmana means if you have something that's warm and you want to keep its heat, to retain its heat, you want to put it, submerge it into hot sand, which surrounds it on all sides, you're not allowed to do that. The Rabbanim say it looks like bishul. It's almost like you're cooking. But what about the opposite case? If you have cold sand, you can take cold food and you want to keep it cold. It's a hot day, you know, you want to serve cold food. They didn't have ice cubes the way we have it today. Are you allowed to submerge that cold food into cold sand? And Rebbe said to his Talmidim, that's awesome. Why? Because if you allow him to do this, he'll do that. He's going to, you know, the amcha, the people will make that connection, they'll make that mistake, and they'll say, well, if you're allowing me to submerge in cold sand, then tomorrow, meaning next Shabbos, I'm going to submerge my hot food, my cholent, into hot sand. All the fun of Yishmael Reb Yossi, who was sitting in the audience, Yishmael, he was already an orphan, he lost his father, Reb Yossi, and he said, Abba Hiter Lahatmin Esatzone, that I heard from my father that you're allowed to take cold food and submerge it in cold sand and maintain its coldness. And we don't make that gzera that, you know, oh, we're afraid if you do this, you do that. Hatman itself is only a gzera, meaning in hot food. So my father, Reb Yossi, didn't go that far. Now, you might ask the following question, was Rabbi Yishmael permitted to say that publicly in a shir when Rebbe gave the shir? And I believe that the answer is yes. Because Chazal say that even though a Talmud is not allowed to contradict his Rebbe, but if he has a Mesorah, and that Mesorah, that tradition, will offer two different traditions, that he's allowed to do. Again, he has to do with a great deal of respect, but he's allowed to do it. So comes along Yishmael and he says, Rabbi Yishmael says, I have a different tradition from my father. Amalehem. Immediately, Rebbe says, without even breathing, Kfar Hora Zake. That's a very famous principle. The Zake, meaning the elder statesman, Rabbi Yossi, gave his Hora, I rescind my Hora. Amar Rav Papa, Bo Re'e Kama Mechavin Zeh. See again how the scholars in Eretz Yisrael are so beloved one to the other. De'ilu Rabbi Yossi Kayam, if Rabbi Yossi were alive, Hayakafu fi Yoshev Lifnei Rebbe, he, Rabbi Yossi himself, would sit in the class of Rebbe. He so much deferred to Rebbe, he felt himself, he says, he is subordinate to Rebbe, and yet, nevertheless, Rebbe deferred to Rabbi Yossi. This is the mutual chavivus of the Talmidei Chacham Sheb Eretz Yisrael, the Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi, Memali Mokom Aviv Hoya, Vaya Kafu Fi Yoshev Lifnei Rebbe. Just like Rabbi Yossi, his father, would sit at the class and listen to Rebbe, so too did Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael was also a great Talmud Chacham on his own right, but nevertheless he followed his father's tradition, and he was kafuf, he saw himself secondary to Rebbe. And nevertheless, despite this all, Ka'amar Kfar Hora Zaken, never Rebbe immediately without hesitation said, Kfar Hora Zaken, the elderly statesman has already given his psak, forget about my Hora.
I'm like Lita.
Right. Lita is Bavel. I'm Amish whole like this. You'll see about the poverty in Bavel. I mean, Lita was so poor. I have a picture of my grandmother's house. In other words, my grandparents' house in Lita. You know, in America, we talk about Abraham Lincoln and the little log cabin that he lived in. The log cabin of Abraham Lincoln in 1865 was like a palace compared to the log cabin that my grandparents lived in Lita. They were so poor. They supported themselves because the goat gave milk, and they sold the goat's milk till the goat got into a fight with a wolf and became a trefa, and they couldn't sell the milk anymore. Don't ask. And that's why my father's father came to America to try to send back a couple of bucks. You know, this is in the 1920s. You know, to my grandparents in Lita. The poverty in Lita was horrible. But the Torah was something else. My father said that in his little shtetl, which nobody ever heard of, my sister works in the Hebrew University Library, after 20 years found a map that had my father's shtetl on it, Plisa. And this was a big simcha in the Berzon family. Yeah. You know. And my father said you could see even in Plisa, candles shining at crazy hours, at midnight and later, of Talmidei Chachamim, who was sitting and learning by candlelight. It's just unbelievable. My father once told me about the Gadol Ador in America, I'm not going to mention his name, who my father knew very well, because my father was a Rav in America. He said about the Gadol Ador that in Lita, Every shtetl had a person of that status. Again, you know, if I'd say this publicly, they would lynch me. Okay? But that's what my father said about Lita. Omer of Oshaya. My dichsiv. Okay. At this point, Rabosai, we're darshaning a prophecy of Zechariah. Now, Zechariah prophesied about the king, and he prophesied about the Mashiach, and sometimes he had different symbols in his prophecy. In this case, Va'ekach Li, he had two symbols, Shnei Maklos, I guess you'd call it a staff, right? Li Echad Karasi Noam, Uli Echad Karasi Chovlim. Now these are antithetical, they're antinomies, they're opposites. Noam means pleasant, and Chovlim are those who attack. Says the Gemara, in the name of Rav Hoshaya, that Zechariah, in his symbolism, is referring to two categories, two different groups of Talmidei Chachamim. One is called Noam, and the other is called Chovlim. Noam, Elu Talmidei Chacham Sheberetz Yisrael Shemanimim Ze Et Ze BaHalacha. When they have a debate in Halacha, each one tries to substantiate his contestant. But Chovlim, those who attack, Elu Talmidei Chacham Shebebavel Shemachablim Ze Et Ze BaHalacha. Each one tries to undermine his friend in Halacha. Keep in mind, the Gemara is going to say later on that after they fight and they battle each other, they eventually come to some agreement, and the halacha becomes even clearer because of these debates. So that you sit in front of the Rebbe and you question, and the Rebbe yells at you and screams at you. Again, you know, people today, they have no clue what that's all about. You know, how today we live in a society, everything has to be nice, you know. What do you say?
Politically correct.
Everything has to be politically correct, and so forth and so on. We're all disciplined. Back in the day, it was fire and brimstone. They used to call each other names. And you see it even in the Gemara. That's because it's a Talmud Bavli. You won't see it in the Yerushalmi. Rav Kook, the first chief rabbi of Palestine, used to say that there are two Gemaras in Bavli and Shami that are almost identical with one difference. The Gemara in both places asks the following question. It says about the Hasidim HaRishonim that they would wait an hour before davening, and after they finished davening, which took them an hour, they would take another hour to allow it to penetrate into their soul. And they did this three times. They said, well, calculate, that's 9 hours a day of tefillah. V'torah son mateh eleho. And what's with their learning of Torah? So it's interesting. The Bavli says, Torah son mishtameres, that Hashem with his great supervision, you know, his divine providence, he sees to it that the Torah will not be forgotten, and somehow they retain the Torah even though they had so little time for learning. The same text, excuse me, appears in the Yerushalmi, and Rav Kook says, if you notice carefully, there's one change. There it says, to answer this question about that Torah, Torah son misbareches, that Torah is blessed. Says Rav Kook, that's the difference between Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz La'aretz it's Mishtameres, but in Eretz Yisrael it's Mitbarechet. Mitbarechet means it even increases. That's the greatness of Torah's Eretz Yisrael. Vayomer, another point in Zechariah Novi, he says, Eile Shnei B'nei HaYitzar HaOmdim. Okay, now we're talking about Yitzar. You know that Yitzar is you know, the Truma Doraisa on Tirosh v'Yitzar. Like, Tirosh is wine and Yitzar is oil. So we're talking about Yitzar now. So he makes a declaration about two sons of Yitzar, of oil, and they're standing. Again, you v'shnei zesim aleha, and you see the zesim that are somehow miraculously being, so to speak, squeezed, and the dripping, the oil drips, and we have olive oil from these zaysin. Now, this vision of Zechariah Novi again has to do with the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash. Zechariah was the Novi who lived between the Churban Bais Rishon and the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, and he saw a lot of visions, what we call a chazon hanavua, of the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. And of course, the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash was always the symbolism of Shechina, of the greatness of the Beis HaMikdash. So many places the Gemara asks, how is it that Zechariah had such unbelievable visions of a beautiful, sophisticated Mikdash when the Mikdash Sheni was nothing compared to the first Mikdash in its physical beauty? But that's a different story. Okay, I don't want to get off on a tangent. I already did that a few times. Yitzhar says the Gemara, what is this oil symbolic of? Amar Rav Yitzchak, Eilu Talmidei Chacham Sheberetz Yisrael Shenochim Zela Zeba Halacha Kishemen Zayis. Now it's very interesting that the Zayis itself is bitter, but after the oil is extracted from the Zayis, it becomes sweet. And in Zechariah's Nevuah, he mentions both the Yitzhar and the Zayis. So the Gemara says that these are two different symbols. The Gemara says, "Ushnei zeisim aleha elu talmid chacham shebebavel." If you're referring to the olives themselves, she merurim zela zeba halacha kizayis. Now the word merurim, I think, is a verb, an active verb, a shem poel. It's not a description. It's an active verb. Merurim means that they make each other bitter. You know, if you want to say that I make your life bitter, Chas V'Shalom, then you say merurim. And the Chachamim, in their battles, one with the other in Bavel, typically they would make life bitter for each other. But when you extract the oil, then it becomes sweet, and that's already Eretz Yisrael Shenochim or Manimim Zed Zeba Halacha. Now, I have a friend whose name is Noam. I think the doc knows him. And the name Noam, which you'll find here and there, which means Ne'imut, people don't realize that that word is connected to Eretz Yisrael. So that if you want to bring up a child for the love of Eretz Yisrael, the name Noam is a particularly beautiful name to choose, because Ne'imus is typical of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says that we're not so satisfied about the Torah that was learned in Bavel, and this is based again on a pasuk in Zechariah Navi. Ve'esa einai va'era v'hine shtayim noshim yotzos. Now these two women become symbolic of some sort of a negative phenomenon in Jewish history. V'ruach bekanfehem ulehena Knofayim bekanfe kekanfe achasida vatisena es ha'efa ben ha'aretz uben ha'shamayim. And let's translate the pasuk in Zechariah. I lifted my eyes and I saw and I beheld two women coming out. The wind was in their wings. Apparently they were angels. And they had wings like the wings of chasida. We'll have to see what that means. And they lifted up the Eifa measure. Eifa is a certain volume of solids between the earth and the heaven. Then Zechariah continues and he says, Valmar El Hamalach Adover Bi. Again, Zechariah is not Moshe Rabbeinu. He doesn't get a direct vision from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The intermediary is the Malach who presents the vision to Zechariah as a prophecy. And he turns Zechariah to the Malach. And he says, Ona hema molichos es ha'efa. He was a little bit perplexed here. He sees that these women are carrying the efa measure somehow between earth and the heavens. Where are they, you know, what's this all about? Vayomer, so in answer to that question, Vayomer Eli, the Malach, says to Zechariah, Livnos la Bayis be'eretz shinar. This ephah apparently was an ephah of some sort of a solid substance that could be used to build a house in Shinar. So this whole dialogue between Zechariah and the Malach and the vision that he saw and the interpretation of that vision is very ambiguous. Om Rabbi Yochan Mishum Rabbi Shimba Yochai Zu chanufa v'gasus haruach sheyardu lebavel. In other words, what this nevuah is all about is Bavel. Shinar is located in close proximity to Bavel. And if you take a look here, footnote number 21 is very helpful, and it's an elaboration of Rashi. He says that who are these two women? You remember that the pasuk says that they had what's called ruach b'knafehem, a wind in their wings. Now, wind is always symbolic of someone who's full of himself. You know what I'm talking about? What do you say?
Shachtanut.
Like shachtanut, right? Now, the chasida here, which is being used as an analogy to the wings of these two ladies, is a bird that seems to be pious. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the chassid is called an ostrich in English. In my text, it doesn't say exactly. Anyway, it says that these women are both personifications of midos ros, of two different midos. And what are these midos representative of? Of number one, gasus, and number two, of chanufa. Chanufa means when I try to show you that you're great, but I don't mean it sincerely. He uses the word sanctimonious. I'm not sure what that means. I didn't get a chance to look it up. And then there's something called gasus ruach. Gasus ruach means when I'm bloated, right? I feel the wind.
Chanufa in modern Hebrew is when you sort of
play up to someone.
You want something out of it.
Correct. So he says the following. What is this gasus ruach referring to? It's referring to Bavel. In Bavel, the Talmidei Chachamim gave themselves a pat on the back. They felt sort of arrogant about their accomplishments. And gasus ruach, the Gemara says, somehow descends yardu lebavel. The Gemara is not happy about that. V'gasus ruach lebavel nachis v'amar mar. There's another area in the world, and that's where the gasus was typical. Asara kabin gasus yardu liolam tishinot lo elam v'achas kolom kulo. So there's an area in the world called Elam, which is somewhere in the general vicinity of Bavel, but that's where you'll find gasus ruach. And Elam took 90% of this arrogance that was brought into the world. So it doesn't seem like Bavel really is the place of arrogance. So the Gemara answers in Le Bavel Nachis. It's true, as we saw in the interpretation of Zechariah HaNavi's Nevuah, that Bavel received from Shamayim this Gasus, but Ishtarvuve Dishtarvul Elam from Bavel, it sort of overflowed until it finally went to Elam. Dekonami, and now we'll read the Pasuk, and we'll see it very clearly in the Pasuk. It says, Dechsiv, Livnos Labayis Bi Eretz Shinar. If you'll notice, the word La, she, or her, is in the singular. Livnos la bayis. So it's implying that there's only one woman here. Now, Zechariah Novis in his vision saw two women. So why did he say livnos la bayis? Shma mina, it means that we started with Bavel, and then it moved over to Elam. Now, Rashi explains that there were two midos here. One midah was gasus, and the other midah was chanufa. And he says that gasus started in Bavel, and then it moved over to Elam, and that's where 90% of the gasus descended upon it. But, or I shouldn't say descended, extended to it. But as far as the other midah of chanufa, that seems to have remained in Bavel. Va'amar ma'a, the Gemara says, I don't understand. We had a pasuk that said, we had a statement that goes, Simon legasus haruach anius. And anius bebovel noches. We know that in Bavel there was lots of poverty. This is based on a Gemara in Kiddushin that says that 90% of the poverty of the world rested on Bavel. And poverty is a punishment for gasus ruach. So why are you telling me that all the gasus ruach migrated to Elam? That's not true. Otherwise, why would Bavel be so stricken by poverty? It must be that they had gasus ruach, that the Talmidei Chacham in Bavel suffered from a certain kind of arrogance. And it didn't shift over to Elam. And the Gemara answers, my anius, when the Gemara in Kiddushin says that 90% of the anius in the world somehow descended upon Bavel, it wasn't referring to monetary poverty, but anius de Torah. And in Bavel, there was a certain anius de Torah. Now, the point here is, as Rashi says, not here, but in Kiddushin, is that a person who's arrogant is not willing to give that extra mile, you know, to go that extra diligence and review his Torah knowledge. You know, he just wants to keep going on and on. That's a reflection of Gaifa. And if that be the case, then he doesn't really remember his limud. So again, Rav Osai, in Bavel they were experts at what we call dialectics, at pilpul. But in terms of retaining their Torah, because they were arrogant, they ended up poor in their Torah knowledge. And this is based on a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. And what does it say in Shir HaShirim? Dechsiv achos lanu ketana v'shadayim ein la. In other words, if I don't have my Torah, if I don't retain my Torah knowledge, and it's very difficult to transmit that Torah. A woman transmits her milk to nourish and nurture the baby. But here in the case of Bavel, they're being compared to a woman who has no ability to nurture the baby. Meaning the Babylonians didn't have the ability to transmit that Torah. But now again, keep in mind, the Gemara is assuming that the arrogance migrated from where to where? From Bavel to Elam. Do you remember that? Because 90% of the arrogance ended up in Elam. On Rab Yochanan, Zo Elam, she zachsa lilmod v'lo zachsa lilame. That this pasuk in Shir HaShirim is an allusion to what went on in Elam, that they had the ability to what? To study Torah, but not to transmit the Torah. My Bavel, and Rab Yochanan wants to say that the name Bavel is somehow indicative of that limited ability of Torah study in Bavel. Blula b'mikra, blula b'mishnah, blula b'talmud. Their Torah was a mixture of so many different disciplines, but it wasn't well organized. So let's just read a little bit what he says here about Bavel. He says that the etymology of the word Bavel, the Hebrew word Bavel, is similar to the word Balul. Balul or Blula means it's mixed together. And he says the following, that the Gemara now is criticizing the method by which the Babylonians taught Torah. It was all jumbled together. There wasn't some sort of organized way that first you study Mishnah, then you go on to study Talmud, and so forth and so on. Now in the Old City, I don't know if you know about this, there's a movement, the Zilberman, whatever it is, they're trying to bring Eretz Yisrael back to what it once was and distance themselves from the Babylonian method. So they, you know, they dedicate years and years to the study of Chumash and Tanakh, and then they go on to Mishnah. The children don't start learning Gemara until they're 15 years old. Now what about Elam? He says the following, that there were two great Nevi'im, Talmidei Chachamim, that settled in Elam, and they tried unsuccessfully to teach Torah in Elam. And that was Daniel and Mordechai. And in essence, this symbolic interpretation of Rabbi Yochanan of the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim is a reference to Daniel and Mordechai. and they're considered like Shadayim Eila, meaning they were not successful in teaching Torah in Eila. Now, that's in contrast to Bavel. In Bavel, Ezra came, and he was successful to spread Torah on a massive scale. Now, the Jews of Bavel were financially strapped, but in terms of Torah, they were wealthy compared to Elam, because Elam, when it came to Torah study, because of their gaiva, their gassus ruach, they were impoverished. So you get the impression that the midah of gassus ruach ultimately migrated from Bavel to Elam. It remained in Elam, that's the 90%, but Bavel was, in a sense, uplifted, or they rectified this sin of arrogance, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan says they were able to understand Torah. However, because of the dialectic blula way that they learned Torah, it was very hard for them to successfully teach Torah in such a way that the Torah would be retained. The Gemara concludes by quoting a pasuk in Koheles, not in Koheles, in Eicha. And what does it say over there? B'machshakim hoshivani kimisei olam. And what is this machshakim? Machshakim is a reference to darkness. On Rabbi Yirmiya zeh Talmuda shel Bavel. That the Torah study, the knowledge in Bavel was somewhat dark. And again, even though they were great at analyzing and pilpul and dialectics and one fighting with the other, nevertheless, there was a certain confusion. You know, it's like, if I give a mashal, you ask a yeshiva bacher today who comes from a Lithuanian yeshiva, how much did you cover last year? And if he tells you 30 blot, you're amazed. You know? So again, this broader, organized basis of Torah study, that was not typical of Bavel. Okay, now we start the Mishnah. Omar Lo, one of the Balei Dinim says to his contestant, to the other baldin, Neman alai abba, neman alai avicha, neman alai shlosha roe bakar. I'm willing to accept judges who technically are disqualified. And as we discussed at great length, there's a fundamental difference between the first two cases. Those are cases of judges that are disqualified in this specific case. The third case of roe bakar, these are people who are ignorant and would not be qualified at all. Now the question is, once a litigant made that statement, is he committed in an irreversible way to accept those judges? Rabbi Meir says, Yachal Lachzor Bo. Okay, he made a statement, he was in a mood, but now he changed his mind. And you asked me yesterday, Doc, what happens if they're already in the process of judgment? It would seem from the Gemaras we're going to learn soon, that even in the process of judgment, he still has the right to change his mind. Even perhaps after the Gemara did. It's irreversible. He made that commitment. He has to live up to that commitment, because when it comes to moment kol tanai shel moment kayam, a person can commit himself to any financial obligation and it is binding. The question is, was there an absolute mechila here? That's going to be the subject of our sugya. A similar machlokas we have at the end of our Mishnah, Yechayev lechavero shvua. The evidence against a litigant generates a chiyuv shvuah. V'yomer lo, and he says, the other baldin says to him, you know what? I waive it. You don't have to take a shvuah. But rather, darli is milosha neder, take me a neder, b'chaye roshcha. Just make this statement that you swear by the life of your head. And I will accept your neder, your shvuah, to replace a shvuah of bezdin, which requires nikita scheta, it requires enunciating the name of Hashem. I'm willing to waive all those conditions. Just take me a shvuah. Rav Meir Omer Yochel Lachzor Bo. Okay, he made that commitment, but he can change his mind. V'chacham Omer Einu Yochel Lachzor Bo. Okay. Now, Omer Avdimi Berei Derav Nachman Berei Derav Yosef. What's the case in the Reisha of Mishnah Neman Olai Abba Neman Olai Avicha Kigon Dekabli Alei Bechad? In other words, there are two issues here. One issue is, who could judge? Who who's qualified. The other issue is, how many judges do you need? So this tradition of Rav Dimi has it that the Machlokas in our Mishnah, the scenario in our Mishnah is where he waived only one requirement. He still requires three judges. But as far as one judge is concerned, he's willing to accept Abba or Avicha. So now, it comes out the following. The Chachamim say that he cannot rescind his agreement because he only changed one detail in the pristine, pure laws and demands of judgment. But, according to Rav Dimi, the Chachamim would agree that if he had a double dip, in other words, if he said, I'm willing to accept one judge who's not kosher l'dayanus, meaning he's a father, he's a relative, and I'm willing to accept him as if he were three judges, that's already tati l'reusa, that's not a serious commitment. And even the Chacham would agree that he could renege. Okay.
So you'd have a base deal of one.
Again, if he doesn't rescind his original commitment, there'll be a Beis Din of one, and that one is not even kosher to be a judge. Why? Because kol tanai shebemo mankayim. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, what's the deal here? Why would the Chachamim say that he cannot rescind? I mean, a person makes a statement and therefore he can't change his mind? Machlokes b'machu l'cha. The case in which the Chachamim said that he cannot renege is because he said machalucha, meaning my claim is forgiven to you if this judge, who's not really a judge, decides in your favor. Avol be'etein lucha. If he says, look, after the verdict is handed down, I will dig into my pocket and I will pay you. That's not a mechila. Divriyak kol yochel lachzobo. Even the Chachamim would agree that this is not a binding commitment. He never said the word mechila. Again, according to Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, the question that arises is, Rabbi Meir, why does Rabbi Meir hold that he can change his mind if he said machalucha? Machalucha is an outright mechila. Now, apparently, mechila only operates, according to Rabbi Meir, when I owe you money, and you say to me, machal. But here, it's just a question of whether or not the judgment can be implemented by a posel. That's not called mechila, according to Rabbi Meir. And therefore, he could be chozer bo. The Chacham say, for sure it is mechila, and he can't be chozer. But everybody would agree, says Rav Dimi, that if he didn't say the magic word mechila, but rather he said, etein lecha, then he could be chozer bo. Even the Chacham agree. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, be etein lecha machlokes. On the contrary, pukfaket, as we say. According to Rabbi Meir, if he said machal lecha, Rabbi Meir would also admit that he cannot be chozer bo, because it's halacha mechila and dini mominus. But here this is machlokes, because he said etein lecha. Rabbi Meir says that's not an irreversible commitment. He said he will pay him, but he decided he doesn't want to pay him. He wants an outright, you know, bona fide judgment when a Beis Din shall ksheir him. On the other hand, the Chachamim say, once you say etein lecha, that's a hischaivus. The question is going to be, was there any sort of kinyan, where I mentioned yesterday, a kinyan sudar, that clinches such a hischaivus? Ibailahu, the Gemara asks, Be'etein l'cha machlokas, what did Rabbi Yochanan mean? When he said the machlokas, be'etein l'cha means only in that case or even in that case. If he meant only in that case, even Rabbi Meir agrees that once it was mechila, he cannot retract the mechila. Mechila is chal. O dilma, bein bazu machlokas. The chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan in arguing against Shmuel was that even in the case of etein lecha, even that far, the Chacham went that far to say that he cannot rescind such a commitment. Tashma, diyama Rava, and now the Gemara is going to analyze whether Rava holds like Rav Dimi, I'm sorry, like Shmuel, or like Rav Yochanan, maybe he's a third opinion in this Gemara. Diyama Rava, machlokes be'etein lecha. This sounds like Rabbi Yochanan. So at this point, the Gemara understands that Rava is maintaining Rabbi Yochanan's interpretation of our Mishnah. Amal b'machalcha divrei akol eino yochel latzav. But even Rabbi Meir agrees that you cannot retract the mechila. So now the Gemara says we understand that if Rav is accepting Rabbi Yochanan, we now have an answer to our suffix about Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yochanan would say that the machlokas is only in etein lecha, but in machlecha even Rabbi Meir would agree that he cannot resin. E amrit bishlema bi etein lecha machlokas avol machlecha divrei akol eino yochel lachzav. But Rabbi Meir agrees that once there was a mechila, you cannot resin the mechila. Is Rav the amrit Rabbi Yochanan? Rava is just elucidating the statement, the interpretation of Rabbi Yochanan. Eli Amrit Bein Vazu, Bein Vazu Machlokas. If Rabbi Yochanan said that in both cases there's a Machlokas, is then Rava di Omar Kiman. Rava turns out to be against both Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. He's against Shmuel because he holds that there's a Machlokas even in the case of Etein Lecha. And the Chacham say you cannot rescind even in a commitment without a Machila. He's against Rabbi Yochanan because Rabbi Yochanan said that there'd be a Machlokas even in the case of Machal Lecha. And Rava, by insisting that there's a Machlokas in the case of Etein Lecha, but not in the case of Machal Lecha, is not accepting neither the opinion of Shmuel nor the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. Says the Gemara, don't be nispoil. You shouldn't get all upset about that. Rav time in the nafshi cover. Rav is a third shita, and he is midway between the two polar extremes of Shmuel. Shmuel holds that in etein lecha there is no machlokas. Rabbi Yochanan holds that there's a machlokas in both machlokas and etein lecha, and Rava is in the middle. He holds that there's a machlokas in etein lecha, but there's no machlokas in machlokas. Esve Rav Acha bar tachlifa l'Rava. Rav Acha raised an objection from the Sefer of our Mishnah. It says in the Sefer, Yechayv l'chaver shvua, v'yomer lo, dar li b'chay roshcha. Is Rabbi Meir Omer Yochel Lachzor b'Chachom Omrim? Eino Yochel Lachzor bo. So the Sefer records Machlokas in the case of a Chiyuv Shvuah, where the Tzad Shekineged says, you know what? You don't have to take the Shvuah. Can he rescind such a commitment or not? Now we turn to Daf Chav Dalid Omid Beis. My love, be Osan Hanishboin Velo Mishalmim. This is what's called in the language of the Shas, a Shvuas Nishba V'Niftar, which means that the defendant, the Nitba, is Chayav Shvuah. For example, classic case would be Moda V'Miksataina. And in such a case, the Nitba, who admitted half of the claim of the Toveh, has to take a Shvuah on the other half. This would make simple sense, that this is a case of machalcha, because basically the defendant owes the money until he takes the shmua. The plaintiff now, the tovea, has rights to that money. If he says, you know what, you don't have to take the shmua, that means that he's basically being mochel money. He has money that's coming to him, it's almost in his pocket, because the nitba is not willing to take the shvua. And then he says to him, you know what, you don't have to take the shvua, just make an oath, you know, a personal oath. That's a case of machalcha. And if that be the case, we see clearly that our Mishnah records a machlokas as to whether the baldin can rescind a commitment, even though that commitment was a mechila. Lo, says the Gemara. There's a different type of shvua. There's what's called a nishba v'notel, the osan hanishboim v'notlim, which means that sometimes chachamim, even though the Torah doesn't recognize such a shvua, but the chachamim institute a shvua of a nishba v'notel, where the malva, in order to collect, he has to substantiate his claim with a shvua. Davilei ke'etein lecha. This is not a case of mechila, because even though the malva may have rights to collect, what he's saying is, etein lecha, I'm going to give you that money, meaning I'm going to offer you the money if you take this shvua. That's already a case of etein lecha. And Rava said that that's the subject of the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, v'atani le'resha, if you're telling me that the last case is a case of etein lecha, and Rava says that the resha of the Mishnah is a case of etein lecha, so what's the difference between accepting a certain person as a judge and being committed to his decision, even though that judge is technically disqualified, and the case where you are willing to waive the shvua. In both cases, it comes out to etein lecha. And the Gemara answers, tole bedas acherim, I'm sorry, tana tole bedas acherim, v'tana tole bedas atzmo. There's a fundamental difference between the resha, which is tole bedas acherim, and the sefer, which is tole bedas atzmo. The resha means, I, Mr. Baldin, will call him Reuven, accept the decision of someone else. My father, your father, or the Roy Bokar. That's the resha. The sefer is tole bedas atzmo, meaning, I'm going to decide whether I want to take the shvua. Utsrich. And it goes both ways. There's a chiddush for Rabbi Meir and there's a chiddush for Chachamim. The itan tole bedas acherim. If we only had the resha of the Mishnah, but Hakam Rabbi Meir Dematzi Hadarbe. He certainly is iffy about his commitment. You know, he doesn't know what's the father going to decide. What decision is he going to hand down to Lo Gomer Umakti? And if he never came to an absolute resolve, a Gemiras Das, an absolute conclusive commitment. I don't know what decision is going to be handed down. This is very iffy. It's a real gamble. Avol Bitola Bedas Atzmo, where he's allowing himself to make the decision himself whether he'll take the shvua, he won't take the shvua, his personal oath, then in such a case, it's an absolute gemiras das, a total commitment. He's not iffy and wishy-washy about it, and therefore he cannot rescind it. The whole machlokus is there a gemiras das in the case of tole bedas atzmo? I'm sorry, in the case of tole bedas acherim, but if it was tole bedas atzmo, then even Rabbi Meir would accept the Chachamim Shita, that he made an absolute binding commitment with the Gemiras Das. The Yashmin and Baha, if the Mishnah only told us the Sefer, which is the case of tole bedas atzmo, Baha Kami Rabbanon, since he made an absolute decision, he knows whether he's going to decide to take the Shvuah or not, then he cannot retract, he cannot rescind his commitment. Aval Bahi. But in the case of the father, right, that your father or my father could serve as a judge, where it's very iffy in his mind, Ema Modulei Rabbanil Rabbi Meir, that he never made an absolute commitment, Sricha, therefore we need both the Reish and the Sefer. Or Reish Lakish, and now we come back to the Doc's question of yesterday, when we said that according to Rabbi Meir, he has the power to rescind his commitment. How far are we going with that? Is that even after the decision was handed down? They went through the whole court case? Says Reish Lakish, no. Rachlokes lifnei gmar din. The verdict has not yet been handed down. And then Rabbi Meir says, since we're still in the middle of the verdict, maybe he got wind of the fact that he's about to lose, therefore he wants to retract his commitment and say, let's start from scratch and get a group of Dayanim Kshayrim. Avol Yachar Gmar Din, once the Gmar Din is completed, Divrei HaKol, Eino Yochol Lachzor Bo, it is too late. Why? Because if the Baal Din went as far as to allow the Din to come to its conclusion with a Gmar Din, then he definitely had a Gemiras Das, a total conclusive, absolute resolve to accept that Din. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Reish Lakish, we achar Gmar Din machlokes. That even in the case where there was a Gmar Din, still Rabbi Meir insists that he could rescind his original commitment. And basically, we want to know now whether or not there is an irreversible commitment, what we call a Gemar Das, a Gemiras Das, after the Gemar Din. Reish Lakish says no. I'm assuming Reish Lakish says there is a Gemiras Das, and Rabbi Yochanan says no, there's no Gemiras Das. Again, all that is in Rabbi Meir's sheet, I mean to say. Iboilahu, the Gemara says, Safek, li achar Gemar Din, machlokas havalifnei, Gemar Din, divrei HaKol Yochol, lachzor bahu. This was the original suffix of the Gemara. We presented it as a machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. What's the deal in the case of Liachar Gmar Din? Would Rabbi Meir still allow him, the Baal Din, to withdraw? Odilma, Bein Bazu machlokes. Rabbi Meir would go as far as to say he has rights to withdraw even after the Gmar Din. Toshma Dioma Rava. Kibel Olav. Karov, o pasul. if the Baal Din accepted upon himself a Karav apostle who is technically unqualified, lifnei gmar din yochel lachzer bo, liachar gmar din eino yochel lachzer bo. He cannot retract it after the gmar din. Iyam epishlem liachar gmar din machlokes. If we're going to assume that before the Gemar Din, everybody agrees, even the Chachamim agree that he can be Chozer Bo. I missed that point. I didn't emphasize that point before, that the Gemara is offering a possibility that the Chachamim would be molded to Rabbi Meir, that there is a possibility of Chazor before the Gemar Din. The Machlokas is only after Gemar Din. Is then the Gemara says everything makes sense. Why? Because now we see from this price, from the statement of Rava, that lifnei gmar din yochel lachzer bo, that there's such a thing as chazor before gmar din, and then the issue becomes right liachar gmar din. That's where the machlokus is. The Gemara says Rava diomek Rav Yochanan vialiba dirabanan. Now we can make sense out of Rava's statement and say that he holds like Rav Yochanan, according to the Rabbanan. He paskins like the Rabbanan, the way Rabbi Yochanan interpreted the Rabbanan. And the way Rabbi Yochanan interpreted the Rabbanan is that the machlokus is liachar gmar din. But it was kodem gmar din. Even Rabbi Meir, even Chachamim would agree that it could be chozer bo. Ela'i amit bezu, bein bezu machlokes. If you're going to tell me that what Rabbi Yochanan had in mind is that there's a machlokes not only in the case of liachar gmar din, but even in the case of kodem gmar din, in other words, the Chacham would say even kodem gmar din, there's no possibility of reversing the decision. Is Rava diomer kaman? Rava is not holding like anyone. In other words, he's against both Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Hello, lav shmamino liachar gmar din machlokes shmamino. We have to assume that the machlokes here between Rabbi Meir and the Chacham is only liachar gmar din, but if it was before the Gemara Din, even the Chacham agree that he, to Rabbi Meir's position, that he could be Chozer Bo. Sholach Le Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chizdol Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov. What's the deal? Yelam Deinu Rabbeinu Lifnei Gemara Din Machlokes Oliachar Gemara Din Machlokes. What is the scope of the Machlokes? Is it before the Gemara Din or is it after the Gemara Din? And how do we paskin in the machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir? L'chor we would have said halacha kiravin, that we paskin like the majority. Shalach le liachar gmar din machlokas v'halacha kedivrei Chachamim. That even the Chachamim would agree that kodem gmar din he could be chozer bo, and the halacha is like the Chachamim that after gmar din he cannot rescind his commitment. Rav Ashi had a different version of the question and answer. Hachi shalach. This is what Rav Nachman was asking in his question. Be etain lecha machlokes o bimachol lecha machlokes. Is there a machlokes shin chacham rabbeir in the case where he said etain lecha? And there, Rabbi Meir certainly insists that he can be chozer because he never actually gave a mechila. Or are they arguing even about the case of mechila, where he explicitly was mochel, and still Rabbi Meir insists that he can be chozer? But v'alocha k'divrimi, how do we paskin sholach le bi'etein lecha machlokes v'alocha k'divrei chachamim? That everybody agrees in the case of mechila, even Rabbi Meir admits that he cannot be chozer bo because mechila is effective and it clinches the mechila. But the machlokas was in etein lecha. Chacham say in etein lecha he cannot rescind, even though he didn't have an explicit mechila, and we pass him like the chacham. Besura masne hachi. In surah they had it like the original interpretation. Before pedisa masne hachi they had like the second interpretation. And what is this interpretation? Amar Rav Chanina bar Shlemya, Sholchu le mi bei Rav Shmuel, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu lifnei gmar din, Vekanu mi yad omai. If the machlokes is before the gmar din, the Chacham say even before the gmar din he cannot rescind his agreement, is that because kanu miyado, they made a kinyan sudar, and a kinyan sudar actually clinches the gemira's das, and he can no longer rescind shalach lehu in. I'm sorry, ein liachar kinyan klum, meaning if he did make a kinyan, then for sure everybody would agree that it's irreversible. Why? Because the gemara din clinches his das. Now the next Mishnah is going to address what's called Psulei Edus Dirabonon, or Psulei Dayonis Dirabonon, meaning on a Doraisa level, the violation was not recognized by the Torah, and therefore there's no Avera. The Torah says, Lo Toshiv Eid Chamas. Eid Chamas means that he stole something. Here he didn't actually steal, but yet the Rabbanon created a new category of Psul Eileam Psul Mesachi Bekubya. We're talking about a gambler. And even though he didn't stick his hand into someone else's pocket and outright steal, but nevertheless the Rabbanon consider this Gezel de Rabbanon. V'amalve beribis. Again, it wasn't ribis kitsutza. So therefore there's no violation when you take interest on a loan. On a Doraisa level, the Rabbanon extended the Doraisa to include even ribis she'ena kitsutza. They didn't say exactly how much from the get-go he would have to pay him extra. Mafriche yonim. They used to have races with different birds and animals. And if you won, you got to collect the pot. But once again, he's not stealing outright, and therefore it's only gezel midivrei. And the Rabbanon prohibited this kind of sport of gambling for reasons that will be explained by the Gemara. Sochrei shvius. Again, this is bizman hazeh, where shvius is only the Rabbanon, and you're not allowed to sell the produce of shvius for profit. On Rav Shimon, b'tchilo hayukorin osan osvei shvius, misharabu ha'anosim chazu l'krosam sochrei shvius. Okay, this concept of lokhim and what we call sochrei shvius or osvei shvius, that's something that we have to, b'mirtz Hashem, b'lineder, pick up tomorrow in order to finish our stuff. So we'll stop here. Thank you. So